You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Everybody, welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider, joined by a very special guest in today's episode. Recap really the Colts offseason as a whole. We're going to talk through everything here on today's episode. Kevin Bowen of 107.5 1070 The Fan joins us. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Doing good, Evan. How are you doing? How are you doing, man?
No, I'm doing good. Like, it's finally, like we were just talking off the air for a little bit. You finally got back to the practice field today for the first time in a little bit. It has been very sporadic throughout the pandemic, and hopefully we're getting back to some normalcy there. It's great to see you out there on the practice field getting some coverage in for the website. You also wrote a great notebook on that, so go check it out over on 107.5 1070 The Fan. But Kevin, let's talk first just real quickly. I want to shoot these down before they get started because I imagine your mentions are just like mine as well at the moment. Julio Jones, we're hearing a lot of rumors around Atlanta trying to offload that huge contract that Julio Jones has. He's 32 years old. He's been banged up the last couple years as well. It makes sense on paper for, obviously, because the Colts are one of the teams that has some cap space left. Really not much, though, even after the Eric Fisher trade. And with the limited extensions, too, for Darius Leonard and Braden Smith, it's probably going to be near zero here pretty soon. Let's just go ahead, Kevin, and just shoot this down. Like, I don't think there's any possibility that Chris Bauer trades draft capital for a 32-year-old wide receiver. I know Julio is a great receiver, one of the best of all time, but the fit here in Indy, I think, is not really that great, especially when they really are banking on a lot of potential for huge years for Michael Pittman Jr. and Paris Campbell.
Yeah, I mean, to be totally honest with you, Evan, I don't really know where traction began with this rumor. I'm a little confused by it. Just like you said, given the cap space situation the Colts have, they'd really have to finagle some things, and that's not really the Colts' MO at all. I do think Julio Jones is still a very good player. I know he's a little bit banged up last year, but I feel like he's been relatively durable, actually probably pretty durable, over the previous years leading into that. And, I mean, you know, 1,300-yard seasons, 1,400-yard seasons, that's been the norm even as he's reached the age of 30. Again, I know last year, obviously, he was a little bit banged up and certainly didn't produce to the type of, where he set that Hall of Fame bar that he'll obviously go into Canton one day for. So I still think he can be a pretty good player. But, again, I think given the cap situation like you laid out, and then obviously the draft capital is not, you know, at that point to where I think you just have a lot of expendable picks to make that move. And it's a team that's bullish on Michael Pittman, rightfully so, and still has a ton of belief in Paris Campbell, which I think is more of just kind of guesswork because you can't really predict injuries like that when he's had the injury history that you have. But, I don't see it happening. I'm not, again, entirely sure where all this buildup has happened, but I'd be pretty stunned.
Yeah, totally right there with you. And just last point here on the Julio talks, just to put it to bed here, Kevin. Let's say hypothetically that T.Y. Hilton does end up in Baltimore instead of Indy. He comes back to Indy, obviously, on a one-year, $10 million deal with some incentives thrown in there as well. If T.Y., let's say, ended up in Baltimore instead, went to Baltimore in that multi-year deal, maybe that changes the discussion there because, obviously, the Colts would need a veteran, but T.Y.'s kind of that guy now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Certainly if your cap situation or how the offseason went would have gone differently, that would have been in the cards. Now, you know, obviously, are you going to get whatever, 2 months removed from the bulk of free agency, and then you just kind of bank on, you know, a la Eric Fisher. I know Eric Fisher was on the open market for 2 months, but, you know, Julio would be a little bit of a different story. And then also you got to give up some draft picks as well. So I thought the wideout market was deep enough that I was a little bit surprised they didn't make another move just because, you know, if Campbell does go down, you really are in the same situation you were last year. Now, obviously, you're hoping Michael Pittman emerges and takes another step forward. You know, a guy like Desmond Patman, he's not the same skill set as Campbell. I think too many times we just kind of group all the wideouts together, and we don't necessarily look at individual skill sets, which is, you know, when I guess Campbell went down for the first time, everybody's clamoring for Reese Fountain or, you know, I even think Patman at the time. But, DeMichael Harris ended up being a guy that, you know, got a bigger role because, again, he is a little bit more of a similar skill set. So I do think that's something to keep in mind as well. If that does happen.
Kevin, let's go ahead and dive in now to some offseason talk for the Colts. Obviously, a huge offseason just pretty much wrapped up after the Eric Fisher signing. I can't imagine the Colts really do much of anything else heading into training camp. Today was your first time seeing Carson Wentz up close in person throwing the ball, obviously with COVID-19 protocols a little bit further away down the field and like right up close where he could be at Grand Park. But 3 months after the trade, Kevin, how do you feel about the Wentz trade? And after seeing him today throw for the first time, what's the difference that you saw between a guy like Phillip Rivers last year and with Carson Wentz throwing the ball?
Well, I would say my first impressions were kind of this. I mean, size-wise, you're used to that type of quarterback for the Colts. I mean, Andrew Luck was, what, 6'4", 230. Jacoby Brissett, very similar build as well. Obviously, Phillip Rivers probably bigger than that. I think they listed him at 6'5", 240. And I feel like Wentz is very, very close to that. So that's the first thing that stands out to me is just, I mean, Colts do have some big quarterbacks. And you see a guy like Sam Ehlinger out there who's not, you know, small, but I mean, he's definitely smaller than the other two and probably even smaller than Jalen Morton now that I think about it. But I would say the two things that stood out to me that you don't see with Rivers is the speed. All right, I guess speed probably isn't the right word, but just there's a fluidity to his athleticism where you're rolling out and you just have the ability to make a few more plays and certainly escape things and you know, create some off-script stuff. And then the arm. I mean, there is just kind of an effortless motion, you know, similar to Jacob Eason, you know, with both of them throwing together, because oftentimes you would watch Phillip Rivers and Jacoby Brissett throw back-to-back, and you would see a stark contrast in their arm strength. But I would say that's what kind of jumps out to me about Wentz is, you know, you see these number two overall pick traits of a guy that, again, is big, can move, and then has that arm. Now, obviously, in today's session and, you know, really until we get to the preseason and more so the regular season, the guys like Wentz, guys like Jacob Eason, like they should and will look very good in these sessions because that's exactly what they're made for. These are guys that have the big arm. You know, there isn't much of a rush. No one's getting near them. They should be making these plays. You know, really where I think a guy like River shines is when it does get a little chaotic. And, you know, defenses are throwing different things at you, and you've got to be really quick with your decision-making. I think that's where a guy like Rivers does shine. So I always try to, when we evaluate off-season work, I always think you got to kind of mention some of that stuff because it does, I think, favor different skill sets, different players with that. But certainly, you know, in the hour plus that we watch Wentz today, it's the size, it's the effortless with the arm, and it's the ability for a 6'5", 237-pound guy to move.
Health permitting, Kevin, just looking at the ecosystem now around Carson Wentz, obviously the Frank Reich connection with Press Taylor as well as on the staff, Mike Groh, another Philadelphia connection. But on the field, wide receivers being T.Y. Hilton as the veteran presence, you have health permitting Paris Campbell. He could be in for a big breakout year this year. Michael Pittman, they have obviously high hopes for there. Zach Pascal is always reliable. And then at tight end, you have Jack Doyle, Molly Cox, Kylan Granson being that new tight end. Obviously, Taylor and Naeem Hines and Marlon Mack in the backfield as well. And in one of the best offensive lines in the NFL, adding in Eric Fisher, who probably might start on the pup list. So he might miss the first 6 weeks of the season, but probably later on down the road, you might see him really start to gel with the offensive line and really make it a great cohesive unit. It kind of feels like to me, post-draft, post-Fisher signing, Kevin, the ecosystem around Carson Wentz is pretty much set for him to thrive, but it really is all on his shoulders here to really right the ship and make things right from what we saw in 2020, where he really just fell off a cliff.
Yeah, and that's really the biggest thing that the Colts are, you know, banking on. I asked Frank Reich, you know, a question earlier in the week about, you know, when you hear, you know, talk of Carson being broken, you know, and obviously that term is not something Frank wants to hear, but it is a term that we've heard. And, you know, how do you unbreak him? In more of an indirect manner, Frank lays out what you just mentioned, Evan, of, you know, better pass protection, better offensive line, you know, more of a stable unit up front. Certainly a bell cow in Jonathan Taylor who, you know, can and I think should, I should say could and should really flourish this season. And then I just think a head coach in Frank Reich and a play caller in Frank Reich that he respects. Now, obviously, Frank was in much more of a good cop role in Philly, and he is going to have to be a little bit of a bad cop if necessary at times because he is the play caller here now and he is the head coach and not just the offensive coordinator. Wasn't calling the plays in Philly, but without a doubt, They believe, and for good reason, support system around Carson Wentz is, again, just puts him in a much better position. And then I think atmosphere-wise, environment-wise, whatever, the city of Indianapolis, the surrounding community, I believe his wife is from Kentucky. You know, all of that is a little bit more to Carson Wentz's speed than what you have to deal with in Philadelphia. So for all those reasons, I think that is why they believe that a quarterback who did have the most interceptions in the league last year, despite not playing the final four games, and them and the Eagles, you know, the Wentz camp and the Eagles camp, you clearly had a divorce just, you know, a couple years after thinking that this was going to be the direction moving forward, that the Colts could get him back to, again, it doesn't have to be 2017 status, but 2018, 2019, I think Colts sign up for that very happily.
Last point here on Wentz, Kevin, before we dive into some more offseason talk. Looking just at this Colts offense on paper as a whole and how Carson Wentz could operate it, I mean, I went back and watched some more 2017 Wentz with Reich as the play caller there. A lot of motions, a lot of rollouts using his mobility. Same thing with Andrew Luck in 2018 later in the year, kind of did the same thing. And thinking back more to Philip Rivers last year in 2020, a lot of quick hitting stuff, slants, drags, really not many deep shots, just letting Rivers, without his mobility, just kind of just sit there and go 1-2-3 throw, 1-2-3 throw, for example, to really limit those turnovers he had in his last year in LA. How do you see like the playbook opening up with Carson Wentz at quarterback compared to the quarterbacks we've seen in the past with Rivers, Brissett, and Luck? Do you see it's like a mix of everything, or how do you see it going down?
It's a good question. You know, certainly the rollout element, I think, has got to be there a little bit more. I think in general, just the RPO side of the playbook, to where you did some stuff last year with Rivers, but it was more of, instead of the run, it was more of honestly just his reacting, I guess, if I'm keeping in the R letter, because you were, you know, much more locked Rivers' mind in that situation and less of obviously what he could not do with his legs whatsoever. So I do think Wentz now gives you more of the multiple options when you get into those types of plays, and you know, type of trust where you're putting it more on the quarterback's shoulders to make that read and react as is. So I would say, yeah, that, the rollouts, and then obviously the vertical passing game. A lot that I've talked about on my podcast is, you know, Carson is a really good seam ball thrower. So I think that adds to kind of, you know, the selection of Kylan Grant. And, you know, I think back to the Hilton big play last year against Houston at home late in that game. Yeah, I want to say it was like a second and super long. You really needed a chunk play to get back in the field goal range. And Rivers delivers a strike to Hilton down the seam. But it's not a ball we saw Rivers attempt a whole lot last year. But in the moment, I think he knew he had to kind of thread it and take a chance. I do feel like Carson will be a little bit more open to that. I guess one thing that we have to mention, which given Carson's personality, I don't think he is in this boat. But like, there are some skeptics in Philly that feel like he's gotten a bit gun-shy. And just, you know, making those reads, confident reads, throwing guys open. Now, obviously, when you throw 15 interceptions, certainly there's a risk factor that is there. But I do think that's something to keep an eye on. You would think an offensive line that is going to protect him better on paper would lend to him, you know, having more confidence and not being afraid of it, you know, again, for maybe that's not the right term to use. But I do think that is something to watch. But as long as he has that confidence, and it, you know, it isn't afraid to rip it, then I think there will be different parts of this offense that will be utilized. Whereas Rivers, like you said, certainly his quick rhythm and his timing, I mean, that was a huge asset to this offense and helped out the offensive line and got some playmakers the ball in their hands and really allowed the Colts to move the football on a pretty consistent basis when they needed, when they wanted to, through the air.
Colts fans, rockauto.com is the place to go if you want to save money on your next car purchase. Whether it be saving over $100 on a fuel pump assembly or even more, you can get stuff like motor oil, tail lamps, engine control modules, brake parts, new carpet, whatever it may be, rockauto.com always has you covered. And best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low and the same professionals do yourselfers. So why spend the twice as much for the same parts and get them even cheaper over at Rock Auto? Go to rockauto.com right now, see the parts available for your car or truck, write Locked On in the How to Your Boss box, so that Locked On Colts sent you over there. They have a main selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Colts fans, go to rockauto.com right now and write Locked On, L-O-C-K-E-D-O-N, in the How to Your Boss box, so know that we sent you over there. looking at just the offseason again, just after the Wentz trade, I think me and you both talked about this on the podcast before, Kevin, where I think heading into the draft and free agency, the biggest needs for this team were edge rusher, adding another weapon, whether it be wideout or tight end, and as well addressing left tackle. And how they went about it in the end, looking back on it, Kwity Paye and Dio Odengbo rounds 1 and 2 in the draft. You sign Eric Fisher to a one-year deal in free agency. It sounds like there could be a potential for a multi-year deal if he does well this year. And you draft Kylan Granson and re-sign T.Y. Hilton and for the pass catchers, so to say, to add on to this team. Looking back on it now, how do you feel like the Colts addressed those three key needs after the Wentz trade?
Yeah, well, I guess let's start with Kwity Paye. You know, I was a big fan of, again, just doing something a little bit more in free agency. I felt like the opportunity was there, you know, kind of a rare opportunity, but it was there for you to go ahead and just lessen that need a little bit. You know, obviously, would that have changed, you know, how you're looking at drafts-wise? You know, sure, possibly. You know, Dio Dangbo is a huge, huge guy that Chris Ballard is obsessed with, so maybe it wouldn't have. But I do think that if you could have done something a little bit there, maybe you don't take Paye at 21. Maybe it's Christian Darrisaw at 21 or something like that. But so I think long term, you obviously have raised the ceiling on that group. But I still think we just have to be honest with rookie rushers usually take time. Obviously, the Colts feel that with some of their rushers they've drafted in years past. We've seen first round guys take a little bit of time to really, really produce well. Left tackle, obviously, you know, I think Fisher was kind of always in the back pocket. And clearly Chris was just not, you know, that in love with really any of the tackles. I mean, I mentioned Darrisaw possibly at 21 if it wasn't Paye. Besides that, I don't think, you know, really anybody else. Maybe trading back up into the third round, you know, could have been a move. I know Spencer Brown was a guy that I threw around on a Beers with Bowen right before the draft. I think he's a guy that, you know, potentially could have been in their cards, but without that third round pick, he didn't have that. My big issue with left tackle is more so just long term. I mean, obviously Fisher, if healthy, there's really little worry, and you know he still theoretically could play multiple seasons. But long term, there's just nobody at that position that you even feel good about, you know, grooming down the road. What was the third position?
Yeah, just the overall pass catchers, like re-signing T.Y. and getting Kylan Granson.
Yeah, the Granson pick, I'm a fan of. I know from a size standpoint, he's definitely on the smaller end of tight ends. They feel like he can get up to 245 or 250, though. But really, you just don't see a lot of speed run after the catch, you know, yak sort of ability out of tight ends. So I think that's really intriguing. I was always a big fan of, you know, getting that sort of skill set just to complement what you have in Doyle and Ali Cox. I'm kind of going back to what I was saying earlier about wideout. I like bringing back T.Y. I think he better, you know, is better suited for how Carson operates as a QB. But I would like to have seen just another move at wideout in free agency, you know, just in case this Campbell thing doesn't work out. Because I go back to skill sets. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to match skill sets. You know, it's easy to say, well, if Campbell goes down, you have Desmond Patman. Paris Campbell, Desmond Patman. Well, first off, Desmond Patman hasn't, you know, he's played two snaps in the NFL. But, I mean, those skill sets aren't even close to each other. So that's where I think running a back of that position is just a little bit too risky for my liking there. And I know a lot of people are like, okay, cap space, roll eyes, you know, how do you juggle a lot of this? You know, obviously, you know, maybe Fisher would have been in the cards. But I think it is something to where it's a little bit more for me, kind of higher end quality than sort of some of the quantity in free agency. I was all for building the depth along the O-line, but there's just a few signings that just seem like, well, you know, when you come back from the draft, and now it's going to be like, okay, where does a Sean Davis fit for you? Where does an Isaac Rochelle fit for you? Some of those guys, you know, you take two of those guys out, and now you add a wideout. I think that offers you a little bit more of the insurance there, because supporting Carson Wentz, I thought that from a pass catching standpoint, they didn't go really above and beyond anything at the skill group to really, really support him.
Jumping over to the skill position just real quick before we dive into the defense for a second, Kevin, and I don't know if this is like a hot take or not, but I feel like maybe I'm very bullish on Michael Pittman Jr. year two, just what he did in some games last year, especially in the Buffalo playoff game. I feel like he could be in for a really big year two. Carson Wentz also loves those bigger bodied weapons down the field, like Alshon Jeffrey, when Frank Reich was the play caller in 2017. Paris Campbell, obviously you have to throw out the health card every time you talk about Paris, because if he can stay healthy, he does add that new speed element to the inside routes that we haven't really seen in Indy the last couple of years. But do you feel like, honestly, if both those guys ascend, which I think the Colts are really betting on, really not addressing wide out outside of re-signing T.Y., is it fair to say T.Y. could be more so in a backseat role this year, where Pittman and Campbell, if they do ascend, maybe T.Y. is more so like a secondary option?
Yeah. I mean, obviously those are big ifs. To have both of them, you know, do that. But certainly, I mean, I think we saw that at times last season, to be honest with you. You know, I know it was only week one for Campbell, but, you know, when healthy, he was the guy. He out-snapped T.Y. in that game. Late in the season, you know, Michael Pittman was out-snapping T.Y. Hilton. So I think we saw, you know, signs of that last year. You know, something I talked about when T.Y. was signed, or I should say re-signed, for me, and obviously T.Y. has never really been a huge, you know, whatever, 6-7 catch guy. It's more of just, do you make the most out of those, you know, 4 or 5 catches a game, to where, you know, as I was talking about earlier, that Houston play last year where he just makes a big-time play and a big-time moment for you, do you still get that out of Hilton, where it's not just strictly the whole possession stuff and all that? It's never been his game. But even if, you know, quote-unquote, he's the third wideout in playing time, he still can be a very timely weapon for you. And I think that's necessary. And I also think there is an element of, like, I've been in these moments before and I've done that. Yes, Michael Pittman's played in a playoff game and played very well in that playoff game. But, you know, even Pittman had a couple drops in that game. You know, Campbell obviously hasn't been in those moments yet. So I do think there is that presence of a T.Y. of, if it's third down and you're looking for a go-to, you know, do Carson and him develop that sort of rapport of a guy that's been there, done that?
Now, going over to the defense now, Kevin, and you were in the draft room actually with Chris Ballard recapping the draft. I think 8 or 9 of the media members in Indianapolis local media were with him. He does this yearly thing. Unfortunately, last year due to COVID, it wasn't a possibility, but always great insight in there talking about the draft and really anything on the Colts. Ballard is always an open book, which is great for us in the media. But looking at the one player to me that really is standing out to me more every time I hear Chris Ballard talk about him is Dio Odengbo. And if you would have just put just the quotes next to each other, Kevin, you would think that Kwity Paye is a second-round pick and not Dio Odengbo, because I think Chris Ballard has a love affair with Dio Odengbo, and it's fair to see when you watch him on tape, but they're rolling the dice with him, really going to let him sit out most of the 2021 season. But I think they truly see a huge payoff with Odengbo, where he could be a first-round talent. Just what's it been like watching Odengbo when you've had a chance? Or I think you guys saw him just out on the side today at practice. Seems like a huge guy too, with his arm length and his overall just size for a guy his size. It really does feel like Dio is really a true love crush for a guy like Chris Ballard.
He really is. I mean, I'll be honest, Evan. I mean, obviously Quentin Nelson, he was obsessed with. I don't know if I've ever heard Chris Ballard this obsessed over one of his draft picks. And I don't think it's recency bias in saying that, because, you know, it was just a week ago we were in that draft room. I really think I mean it. And obviously when you look at him, watching him today on the field, I mean, there is the wingspan and the arm length that is similar to Buckner. I think and his body fat, I know, is just incredible for a man his size, Dio that is, and I'm sure Buckner as well, which is really impressive considering he is, you know, what, 4 months off the Achilles injury. So I think when you look at him, and, you know, Ballard had a comment, you know, just, and I posted this in that notebook recap from that draft film room of just, you know, he would talk to SEC coaches and they'd say, this is the guy that we just can't get over. Almost like, how is he not, you know, at an SEC West defensive line and yet he's playing for Vanderbilt. So Ballard is, you know, always love length, always love measurables. Especially on that defensive line. You know, there's a reason DeForest Buckner went, you know, 8 overall. And I think, honestly, you know, if it was up to Ballard, I mean, Dangbo could have been a guy in the first round. And I even think that's with the Achilles. But, you know, I think Pay offers a little bit more of a – certainly a little bit of a safer pick and more of that true edge, whereas a guy like Dangbo is probably, you know, edge early downs and then slides inside. On those passing downs. So they feel like he'll be ready to go at some point this season. a little bit behind Eric Fisher in that Achilles rehab, but they do feel like he'll be ready to go again at some point. And I'm definitely eager to see him because, you know, when you do watch and you see the highlights, there are some wow, wow moments. Now it's just, you know, how does he come off the Achilles? Can he do it over a four-quarter period? Things like that. But certainly, you know, when you look at him, there's not many, whatever, 20, 21-year-olds that walk onto an NFL field and they look like they belong right away. And he certainly looked at least, you know, wearing shorts and a jersey today.
Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing and track all the action over at Bet Online. Get all the latest news, odds, info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and our UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, over to Bet Online, your laptop or mobile device, and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams prepare for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use mobile device right now, sign up today, and receive a 50% off welcome bonus to your first deposit. Again, that's 50% off on your first deposit with Bet Online with the promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. They have 9 delicious flavors plus the occasional limited time flavor, but they are so tasty. They taste nothing like a protein bar. They're really just a super healthy candy bar that really tides you over throughout the day. There's something for everyone over on Built Bar. Most of the flavors have 17 grams of protein, all within 130 calories, which makes it a great tasting snack. They have 9 amazing flavors, all tasty and all healthy. Order today and get whatever flavors you like of Built Bars right now. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your first order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15, and for 15% off at builtbar.com. On paper, Kevin, just this defense as a whole, we all knew that pass rush was the biggest need in the offseason with the question marks around Ture, Bandigu, Tyquan Lewis. They draft Kwity Paye, they draft Dio Odengbo, who's going to be, like you mentioned, probably play around November, December time off his Achilles injury. When you see this whole unit on paper, though, the defensive line with Paye and Buckner leading that, Okereke and Leonard at linebacker, you have Rhodes, Moore, Yassin, Blackman, and Willis as your starting DBs. How do you see it on paper going for them? Because I think the Colts were missing that edge presence last year. Like, if they do find a consistent edge rusher that could be a potential double-digit sack guy, it could take this unit to the next level. How do you see it going down in 2021 for them, where they were a top 10 defense last year, I think number 10 overall? Do you think they could take a step up this year in 2021?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it just comes out of that edge rush. Obviously, got to stay healthy at linebacker with Okereke and Leonard. And then the back end, I'm not, you know, overly concerned about it just because I thought Zay Barod showed you a lot of good football last season. But it is a back end. And you know, I thought Kenny Moore was very candid earlier this week that, you know, when you did play some of the better quarterbacks, it is a unit that really struggled. But I mean, the run defense has been incredible under Matt Eberflus. And honestly, before DeForest Buckner got here, it was still a really good unit. And then, you know, it took it to another level last year with Buckner in there, I think number 2 run defense. But, yeah, the edge rush and just the general disrupting up front. I mean, I know Justin Houston, and I've said this many times, he had decent sack numbers, not as consistent pressure numbers that you would like. Autry, really good sack numbers. And I think solid pressure numbers for a guy that kind of plays a little bit all over. But, I mean, you did lose 2 guys that have rushed in the NFL for kind of 6 or 7 years. If you look at the rest of the group and kind of their total sacks in the NFL, the resumes are not very extensive. So that is, I think, something to keep in mind of just, are these guys, you know, kind of budding and ready to bloom, if you will? You know, Ture and Lewis and Al-Kadim Muhammad, you know, Bandigu, like those type of guys, are they ready to take another step forward and become, you know, whatever, 7-8 sack guys? Because if they can do that and complement Buckner, that's going to be huge. But if those guys continue to have the career that we've seen so far, that pass rush could take a step back. Because, again, I just think it's high expectations for whatever. You expect Kwity Paye to walk in here and have a 9 or 10 sack season, or Dio Odengbo to be healthy for, you know, over half the year and be a 7 or 8 sack guy as well. So I do think we probably need to be realistic a little bit with those D-line expectations. There are a lot of names in there, and if some of those young guys can take the 3rd, 4th year jumps that you hope they can take, then that group, I think, can take the next jump. But if not, I think we're probably looking at a group that's, you know, relatively status quo to last year, or possibly taking a step back just because the history did give you something.
Last one here for you, Kevin. Appreciate the time as always when you come on the pod. But looking at this offseason as a whole and the needs they had to address, obviously Philip Rivers and Andy Costanzo retire. You had the needs at edge rush. You had to add a couple playmakers here and there as well, re-sign or getting in the draft. The defense needed a little bit of a facelift as well. How do you feel like Chris Bauer and the Colts address their needs when you look back a week after the Buffalo game and Costanzo and Rivers retired, and now you look back on it in mid-May?
Yeah, I mean, certainly have addressed all of them in some capacity. You know, Wentz, it's just so rare to get a quarterback outside of the draft that you feel like has a higher ceiling, and that's what's so attractive about that sign or about that trade. Obviously, Fisher is health dependent. If healthy, boy, you shouldn't take a step back as an offensive line. That's pretty wild to say about that. Obviously, long term, you haven't solved that. You know, it's kind of the flip side almost on the defensive end spot, where you really addressed in the draft, have, you know, such a long term future that, boy, you could really find something there. But in the short term, you know, again, how big of a jump do you make, considering you had some pretty established veterans in that spot? And then corner, I think for the most part, is really status quo. Now, Marvell Tell was out there today. He's a guy that I'm really eager to see just a little bit more of, considering he had some flashes in that 2019 rookie season as well. So for me, those were the five big needs. You know, you could break them down, I think, all very individually. I think all have kind of a wide range on that scale of how they can go. And it's going to be fun to watch play out. Certainly, I think it's a harder schedule this year. Obviously, out of the gate is very, very difficult. So I think it's really important for, you know, especially without much of an offseason program, because they really aren't doing much, that, you know, training camp in the preseason, you really utilize that time for a lot of those veterans, or for a lot of those frontline guys, I should say, because you got to get off to a good start and don't want to be behind the eight ball. So you look at those five needs. Again, all of them can kind of be broken down individually. They've been addressed. Some positions got super high ceilings on. Others, you know, not as much. Some of them is health dependent. But I think for the most part, you know, when you're penciling in a starting 11 on both sides of the ball, it's very capable of winning the AFC South. I don't think it's a team that's on paper right now, you know, May 20th. I don't sit here and put them in the same sentence with, you know, maybe the top two or three in the AFC. But when you knock on that other door and then you show some stuff in the fall, that can definitely change. So I can't wait to see how it all plays out.
Kevin, always enjoy having you on, man. Colts fans, go ahead and follow Kevin on Twitter. He's a must-follow over there at KBowen1070. And go read his work, as always, over on 107.5-1070 The Fan. And listen to his podcast as well. He always does great work weekly on Kevin's Corner. Kevin, appreciate the time today.
Thanks, Evan. Have a good one, man.